Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TIC FM, and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you on this Sunday morning, and we are pleased to be joined by Laura Cordes. She is the Executive Director of the Connecticut Alliance to End Sexual Violence. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Aaron.
Your slogan is Support, Advocate, and Prevent. Tell us about the work you do.
Well, we're the coalition of nine community-based sexual assault crisis service programs in Connecticut. We have been an organization working to end sexual violence and to center the needs of survivors, both child, adolescent, and adult survivors of sexual violence for over 36 years. And when you say support, advocate, prevent, that is what we do. So 24/7 crisis hotlines, counseling and advocacy for survivors, and accompaniment to police stations, courts, hospitals, working in the community to educate folks, not just about what to do if someone is assaulted in your life or you are a victim of sexual assault, but what we can do as communities to create respectful, supportive environments that don't tolerate the behaviors that lead to sexual violence. And then advocacy, certainly for survivors, but on the public policy front as well, whether it's at the Capitol or in a school district or with a state agency, we want to improve the response to sexual assault survivors who we believe deserve our compassion and support.
So your organization could very well be the first point of contact from someone who experiences sexual violence.
Absolutely. Certainly, every year we take several thousand phone calls on our hotlines, and sometimes those are from survivors themselves in the hours or days after a sexual assault who are seeking help. Sometimes we're the first person they disclose to. So we're there to help people explore their options, make sure they have safety plans if needed, and that they get the care that they deserve.
How has your work changed since the Me Too movement?
It's a great question, and it's still evolving. Our nation is reckoning with epidemic levels of sexual violence. And in the 20 years that I've been doing this work, I am both more hopeful and more frustrated and outraged than I have ever been. The Me Too movement certainly laid bare for millions of Americans that women and girls, and certainly some men and boys, experience harassment, abuse, assault at every age and stage of their lives, and acutely by the hands of people they know and trust. So I think most of us were raised to think that sexual violence is perpetrated by strangers or psychopaths or, pedophiles. And when the reality is well over 80% of sexual assault victims are assaulted by someone they knew or trusted, a family member, a colleague, a friend, someone in their neighborhood. And offenders utilize the relationship, the level of trust, to manipulate, coerce, and harm, and then many times silence survivors.
Sexual violence is probably, one of the most personal things anyone will have to endure. How do you make that person feel safe and reassure them that you are there to help and get them the assistance that they need?
No two survivors are alike, but what we offer and what many survivors need in the aftermath is just someone, first and foremost, to believe them. Certainly the conversation and the Kavanaugh hearings illustrated that despite decades of work and research, certainly funded by the state and government are, themselves, that show the impact of trauma and how common it is for victims to fear stepping forward. You know, survivors know that if they do disclose to a friend or even report to the police, that there's a large chance that they will not be believed or that they somehow will be shamed or blamed or held responsible for the behavior of someone else.
As things unfolded before the Senate Judiciary Committee, as now Justice Kavanaugh was going through his hearings, how did that affect your organization? Did you see an increase in calls?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we joined millions of Americans over the last 3 weeks in feeling like disheartened would be a light word, but crushingly disappointed at the outcomes of the nomination process, certainly because of the lack of thorough investigation that the Senate Judiciary Committee and the president chose not to do, but moreover, the treatment of the brave women who came forward, Dr. Blasey Ford, certainly Deborah Ramirez and Julie Swetnick, and how they were disparaged, dismissed, disbelieved, and mocked by powerful individuals, including the president himself. So impacted, certainly we saw an increase in hotline calls, and that has not stopped. Our numbers, just in terms of the people that we support and serve every year in Connecticut, have increased well over 20% in the last few years. We've seen our hotline numbers jump as well. I know anecdotally, just in the last few weeks, certainly up over 25%.
What sort of training do the people answering those calls have to provide assistance? Mm-hmm.
The coalition sets standards and supports nine community-based sexual assault crisis service programs, and all of our community-based programs have certified sexual assault crisis counselors and advocates. They go through a minimum of training of 40 hours, and they also specialize in working with children, adolescents, and adults. We are one of two states in the country that has a bilingual Spanish-speaking hotline as well. And maybe this is a good time for me to let folks know they can find information about a community-based sexual assault crisis service program in their community by going to endsexualviolenct.org. And then I want to give our hotline numbers. In English, that's 1-888-999-5545. And in Spanish, we have many bilingual speakers in Connecticut, 1-888-568-8332. So we have bilingual Spanish-speaking culturally appropriate advocates at each of our member programs as well.
Someone may not be in the position to immediately make that phone call. What's the best advice you have for remaining safe if they're still in an active situation?
Well, a lot of victims of sexual assault might be fearful of repercussions from the offender, their family members, or friends if they disclose. And I think your question's a good one. So if someone hasn't disclosed to us that they're a survivor, if we're thinking 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys will be sexually assaulted before the age of 18. That's a lot of people with sexual abuse histories. It impacts them in numerous ways. And someone disclosing to you is really a privilege. So believing, listening, most survivors don't want you to, or expect you rather, to solve the problem. They are looking for compassion, support, someone that's not going to question, say, are you sure? Why were you out alone? To reinforce and say, you know what? I'm sorry that happened to you. That wasn't your fault. You deserve safety and support. And you know what? There are folks, free and confidential services. All of our hotlines, all of our advocates have privileged communication in our state. And folks are here for you. And you deserve support and healing.
You noted you've seen an uptick in calls since the allegations against now Justice Kavanaugh unfolded. Is it a volume that you've struggled to respond to?
Well, we're fortunate that we have not only staff but volunteers. But if we're thinking about our movement, many of us are survivors ourselves. So we're holding space for survivors and each other, and we welcome folks to call. And we welcome the community to think critically about the role that they can play. And so it's not only being there for survivors, but what would it be like for folks to think more about what they could do in their community, how they could talk not only to their daughters that we hear a lot about. People say, well, I always talk to my daughter. I always think about her safety. And I'm so glad that parents do that. I also want parents to think about talking to their sons. Most boys, most men do not perpetrate a bully or commit acts of sexual assault. But most perpetrators are men and young boys. So what we're looking at is the ability to think about how we prevent these crimes and these harms before anybody would choose to do that. And that means talking to men, talking to men, and men talking to younger men and boys about respect, empathy, bodily autonomy, and consent at an early age.
Can you talk about the evolution of how colleges in particular respond to allegations of sexual violence? Because it seems often that is where we learn things that we're going to carry with us for the rest of our lives, and how the respect starts there and earlier.
Well, let's go earlier. So Connecticut has actually made great strides in thinking and acting in our General Assembly, taking steps over the last 6-7 years to make sure that we have prevention education and training programs K through 12. So the fall, actually 2 years ago, October 1 of 2016, all school districts K through 12 are required to provide sexual assault awareness and prevention. Again, not just what to do if, but how, what are the lessons that are age appropriate that young people need to know? And so our school districts, it's aspirational, but many of our school districts are starting to institute those lessons by grade. And then our college campuses, both in 2012, 2014, 2016, the Alliance worked with lawmakers in Connecticut to advance some of the strongest campus sexual assault laws in the country. And what those laws do now and require is that there's training, not only for incoming students, but for staff and faculty. And that, the, again, that we're looking not only at how we respond and how we define sexual assault and harassment and abuse, but what we can do to prevent it. So we've seen, both through our advocacy and through a really amazing network of campus staff and administrators, something called the Connecticut College Consortium Against Sexual Violence that the Alliance has organized for over 20 years. Those folks working together have advanced these best practices. So campuses have MOUs, or memos of understanding, with rape crisis centers, domestic violence programs. They're also engaged in the training, and they are required to make sure that students, should they disclose, are given, follow federal law, which we are a little bit worried about what might rollbacks might happen under this administration, but that students are given the resources and support they need, and full understanding of what the process is like to go through the campus judicial process, or to go to the police, or to do both.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Laura Cordes. She is executive director of the Connecticut Alliance to End Sexual Violence. In terms of other areas of public policy, what do we do well in Connecticut, and where can we do better?
Well, we've made great strides in addressing previously untested sexual assault evidence collection kits. To take a big step back, and we're talking about how it is the multiple barriers that victims face in coming forward, both fears from the offender or worry about not being believed. So many people in our culture say, well, why didn't she report? I can tell you from the folks on the front line and survivors that I've spoken to, we expect victims to come forward, but we have to be there for them when they do. And if we're not able to investigate, if we lose track of sexual assault evidence collection kits, if we are hostile in an investigation, or we don't have services and supports that folks need, or if our courts are too backlogged and we can't move a case forward, it's no wonder that folks would worry about coming forward. So everything that we can do within our systems to make sure that victims have compassion, support, and a non-judgmental response, and that our systems are at least working to where evidence will be collected, we'll be able to enter DNA samples from that evidence into CODIS or DNA databases. That's where we've taken big steps forward in our state. Just on that issue alone, we've identified over 2,000 sexual assault evidence collection kits, some that were partially tested, so didn't have the sample, the DNA sample, set to the database, and then some that were never sent to the lab for testing. The good news is that we have great collaboration with the police, with prosecutors, with the great folks at the Division of Scientific Services. That's the one crime lab we have in the state, and certainly victim advocates. We've all been working together along with Governor Malloy, who created the Sexual Assault Kit Working Group to look at these kits, make sure we had funding to get them tested. And the good news is, as of last month, we've tested over half of the kits we identified and were able to enter that DNA sample into database, get some what we'd call at this point a hit, and then go back and start to identify victims that maybe thought nobody cared what happened to them. Or that they expected that nobody was going to investigate. So we're just starting that victim notification process now and making connections between an assault that may have happened well over a decade ago and someone that has been matched into the state DNA database.
What is left to be done? I'm thinking about maybe the next legislative session. You're going to have a new administration, a new legislature. I know last year there was talk of maybe changing the statutes of limitations on some crimes.
There's a lot of work to be done, but we're going back to make sure that we eliminate the statute of limitations for sexual assault felony crimes in our state. Connecticut, I think folks would be surprised to know that we are well behind the overwhelming majority of states, 26 of whom have removed the statute of limitations on rape cases. And in Connecticut, it's just 5 years. So for everything that folks have been learning, but that advocates have known for years, it takes years to heal from a sexual assault. It can take years to feel safe to come forward. Certainly, we know that offenders make threats. And when children are, and young, I should say young folks, are and adolescents are abused, they may not identify what happened to them as abuse. And there are some crimes that you, sexual assault crimes that you may have till your 48th birthday. But we heard testimony last year from someone, a man, who didn't feel like he could tell somebody until he was 50. 2 years after the statute of limitations ran out for him. Victims deserve a chance at justice and healing through the criminal justice process. And it's also a matter of public safety. Offenders go on to reoffend. And if we have the chance to have evidence and to charge and successfully prosecute, that's good news not only for the victim who's seeking justice, but for the community at large.
Tell us about where the funding comes from for the Connecticut Alliance to End Sexual Violence. And like so many other agencies, are you being forced to do more with less?
Yeah. The more with less is certainly always the case, but we're fortunate to have funding that we have fought for years and worked to maintain through the state and through the federal government. We advocated for something called the Violence Against Women Act. It's over 25 years old. It's up for reauthorization, but those have been life-saving dollars to support frontline victim advocates and services for survivors, as well as support for training, trauma-informed interviewing for police officers, the ability to have victim advocates on intensive sex offender probation and parole units throughout our state. But it's helped transform the criminal justice system to improve their response to sexual assault victims as well. And those are dollars that we're having to fight for and secure every year. Increasingly, we look for and ask for the public to support us. And I don't know if I can make that ask, but they could certainly go to endsexualviolenct.org and make a donation. That makes all the difference, allows us to advocate for survivors year in and year out and support them when they need us the most.
For the people who answer your hotlines, how do you make sure they're okay? I'm guessing that after getting call after call from survivors, that can take a toll.
Yeah, we have to advocate for self-care. And, you know, my team 2 weeks from now is going to an orchard in Glastonbury instead of our staff meeting. But we have to carve out time for ourselves. And that means that we have to actually talk to each other about doing that. We have at one of our rape crisis programs, Lily, who is a golden retriever and a wonderful therapy dog that is shared. And we wish we had more of Lily's in the state. But taking time out for ourselves. And, you know, it's a great question and one that I want to remind your audience about that. And thank you for thinking about our staff and our volunteers. But the self-care that's needed right now for survivors who have, many of whom have been re-triggered, re-traumatized through the course of the Me Too conversation, certainly the Kavanaugh hearings, we have a message for them that they deserve support and healing. And it's okay to take some time for yourself, to turn off the news, to walk away. And I know that's not quite what our culture demands of us, but that's okay, especially right now.
Let's take another moment to get those hotline numbers out there and remind us again of what sort of resources are available to survivors, because it's really a spectrum.
Sure. You know, even if it happened a long time ago, even if you never told someone, even if you knew the person who harmed you, we're here for you. Our numbers in English and in Spanish, I'll go with the English hotline first, 1-888-999-5545. In Spanish, 1-888-568-8332. You can talk anonymously on this hotline. You can set up an appointment for individual short-term counseling and advocacy. You could also come and be part of a support group. And important to note that this hotline is not just for survivors, but for those who are friends and family members and supporters. It's hard to know exactly what to say when someone you love has been harmed. So we're here for you as well. We can help you navigate supporting someone. And we also have support groups and sessions for folks that can come into the office as well, who are what we call a secondary survivor.
Will the people who answer that hotline also be able to make the connection with law enforcement if that's something?
Yeah. So the advocacy and accompaniment we provide varies from people wanting to say, I'd like to tell my partner about what happened to me, or I'd like to report this to my boss about what happened that my colleague did to me, or I'd like to go to the police. Could you walk me through what that would look like? Certainly many of our programs have relationships with the police departments in their service area, but we provide support and accompaniment. And especially we were talking about sexual assault evidence collection kits. That's an intensive process. We respond to well over 800 hospital calls every year to support survivors who get immediate health care, as well as have a forensic exam after the assault. But we can also, we're also there to support people who may want to tell an institution on their college campus, for example.
She is Laura Cordes, Executive Director of the Connecticut Alliance to End Sexual Violence. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me, Aaron.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.